Hey everyone, I'm not even going to address the fact that I was gone because I'm sure it gets tiresome when you listen to these all in a row. Except to say that I kept starting this episode and then just nothing freaking is happening. It's really, like, I don't know, the reading's just really neutral, and so I kept just getting frustrated that there's not much going on. So I guess I just have to be okay with the fact that sometimes these won't be funny, you know? I guess they'll just be, not like every episode can be comedic gold, you know? Every episode up until now has been, but, you know, it's not like that can continue forever. So whatever, maybe it'll just have to be informative sometimes, or, you know, we just have to do our work, and maybe I'll accidentally be funny. So we're on this Ruth. We're going through it. There's a couple short books in a row, I think, right? Yeah. So Ruth, chapter 3. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said unto her, "My daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee, that it may be well with thee? And now is not Boaz of our..." Oh, if you remember, you know, I don't know if you just listened to the last one or whatever. We got these two women, the one's widowed, and one of the stepdaughter? I don't know. One of the daughters came with her, and they don't really have any men in their lives, which would actually be pretty rough back then. You need men. And so they're reaching out to Boaz, and remember the girl, like, went in Boaz's... Oh, wait, did that happen yet? Oh, shit. No, that didn't happen yet. But anyway, they're trying to reach out to this guy, Boaz, who's some sort of relative, hoping that he'll just kind of help him out. "And now is not Boaz of our kindred, with whose maidens..." Sorry, clicking. "With whose maidens thou wast? Behold, he winnoweth barley tonight in the threshing floor." I do that all just constantly. Everybody has a threshing floor in their house, right? "Wash thyself, therefore, and anoint thee." Actually, you know, that's the reason I've had such a hard time recording this podcast. I just have a shitload of barley that I need to winnow with on my threshing floor. Put thy raiment upon thee, and get thee down to the floor, but make not thyself known unto the man, until he shall have done eating and drinking. And it shall be, when he lieth down, that thou shalt mark the place where he shall lie, and thou shalt go in, and uncover his feet, and lay thee down, and he will tell thee what thou shalt do." I wonder if that's the mom's way of saying, obviously the mom knows what's going to happen, but maybe the girl's naive or something. It's like, okay, what's he going to tell me to do? We're going to play a game, or, you know, it's a whatever. No, he'll tell you. Don't worry. It might be weird, but he's going to tell you what to do. Just get in bed with him, and just be open. You know, I don't know. He'll tell you. Also, there's an awesome note here. As you know, I always read a lot of the notes just to make sure I know what's going on. It says, "On the whole, we must say, had not Boaz been a person of extraordinary piety, prudence, and continence, this experiment might have been fatal to Ruth." "We cannot easily account for this transaction. Probably Naomi knew more than she revealed to her daughter-in-law. The experiment, however, was dangerous and should in no sense be imitated." So essentially saying, like, don't try this at home, kids. Because the guy is saying, like, Naomi must have known Boaz or told Boaz or something. Because normally if a woman would do this, apparently she'd be killed. I'm guessing she'd be raped first, then probably killed. Just because, you know, that's how great these people were back then. "And she said unto her, all that thou sayest unto me I will do. And she went down unto the floor, and did according to all that her mother-in-law bade her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of corn. And she came softly, uncovered his feet, and laid her down. And it came to pass at midnight that the man was afraid, and turned himself, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. And he said, Who art thou? And she answered, I am Ruth, thine handmaid. Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman." So when she says that, Apparently, this is some weird way of a woman showing, like, whatever that word is. Like, she lies at the foot of the bed, and then, like, if he spreads the skirt of the bed over her, then that means he's going to protect her or something weird, barbaric, like, ritual. I don't know. I guess it's not barbaric. It's just really. The hell are the words I'm looking for today? I don't know. I'm recording this pretty early in the morning. Where was I? And he said, "Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast shewed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, inasmuch as thou followedest not young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, fear not, I will do to thee all that thou requirest." Ooh, oh. Bounch, bow, wow. "For all the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. And now it is true, I am thy near kinsman. Howbeit, there is a kinsman nearer than I. Tarry this night, and it shall be in the morning that if he will perform unto thee a part of a kinsman, well, let him do the kinsman's part. But if he will not do the part of a kinsman to thee, then I will do the part of a kinsman to thee. As the Lord liveth, lie down until the morning." Okay. So, what's going on here pretty much is that I guess there's some law or something that when your husband dies, your next of kin kind of can take you in and get all your land and stuff, like, and have all your possessions and land. And I guess these women apparently have claim to some land, I think, but since they don't have men, they can't do anything with it. And so this Boaz is saying, well, by law, we need to go ask. There's a nearer kinsman than me, so we need to go ask him first. And if he says no, then I'll marry you and take your land, I think, is essentially what he's saying. And she lay at his feet until morning, and didn't let him up, let her up into the bed. No, just had to lay like a little dog at his feet anyway. And she rose up before one could know another. I kind of like that phrase, actually. That's one of those little. I guess one of those little reasons why Dawkins and people say that we should read the King James Version. There are some nice turns of phrase. She rose up before one could know another. That's a good one. I'll give you that, whoever scholars, whoever wrote this. And he said, "Let it not be known that a woman came into the floor." Also, he said, "Bring the veil that thou hast upon thee and hold it." And when she held it, he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her, and she fell just flat on her face. And she went into the city, and when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, "Who art thou, my daughter?" And she told her all that the man had done to her. And she said, "These 6 measures of barley he gave me, for he said to me, go not empty unto thy mother-in-law." Then she said, "Sit still, my daughter, until thou know how the matter will fall, for the man will not be in rest until he have finished this thing this day." That's the end of that chapter. So, chapter 4. Then went Boaz up to the gate and sat him there, and behold, the kinsman of whom Boaz spake came by, unto whom he said, "Ho, such a one, turn aside, sit down here." And he turned aside and sat down. That's okay. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, "Sit ye down here." And they sat down. Jeez, Boaz is on a roll. He just started like making his, commands a little more ambitious. Like, now empty your pockets. Like, all right, we've done everything else he said. So, anyway, and he said unto the kinsman Naomi, Naomi that is apparently a man. Interesting. That is come again out. Or wait, no, am I wrong? No, Naomi. He said unto the kinsman Naomi. What the f. Anyway, that is come again out of the country of Moab, selleth a parcel of land which was our brother Elimelech's. And I thought to advertise thee, saying, buy it before the inhabitants and before the elders of my people. If thou wilt redeem it, redeem it. But if thou wilt not redeem it, then tell me that I may know, for there is none to redeem it besides thee, and I am after thee. And he said, I will redeem it. Then said Boaz, what day thou buyest the field of the hand of Naomi? Okay, never mind. No, Naomi's the mom. I knew that. Thou must buy it also of Ruth, the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to raise. Well, that's a pretty badass nickname, wife of the dead, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance. And the kinsman said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I mar my own inheritance. Redeem thou my right to thyself, for I cannot redeem it. So essentially the guy's like, no, not going to do it. The nearer kinsman. Now this was the manner in the former time in Israel concerning redeeming and concerning changing, for to confirm all things. A man plucked off his shoe. I love these just absolutely ridiculous customs they had. Just goes to show how advanced of a civilization they were. A man plucked off his shoe and gave it to his neighbor, and this was a testimony in Israel. Therefore the kinsman said unto Boaz, buy it for thee. So he drew off his shoe, and Boaz said unto the elders, and unto all the people, ye are witnesses this day that this man has disgusting feet, that I, just unrelated to all this inheritance stuff, that I have bought all that was Elimelech's, and all that was Chilion's and Mahlon's, and of the hand of Naomi. Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of Mahlon, have I purchased to be my wife. Oh, that's just bought her to be his wife. Awesome. To raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance, that the name of the dead be not cut off from among his brethren, and from the gate of his place. Ye are witnesses this day. And all the people that were in the gate, and all the elders said, we are witnesses. These elders are some of the most just malleable people. They don't, whatever Boaz says, they're like, yeah, here, we'll do that. The Lord make the woman that is come into thine house like Rachel and Leah, which too did build the house of Israel, and do thou worthily in Ephratah, and be famous in Bethlehem. That's all it takes to be famous in Bethlehem, huh? And let thy house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bare unto Judah, of the seed which the Lord shall give thee of this young woman. I know I must sound like a second grader when I have to read all these names. They're challenging for me. Maybe I'm a little challenged, you know. I don't know, that could be it, but I have to like slowly, Perez, whom Tamar bare unto Judah, you know. Stupid. So Boaz took Ruth, and she was his wife. And when he went in unto her, the Lord gave her conception. And so the Lord like intercepted the seed. I like how he went in unto her, but the Lord still gave her the conception. Like, what did the Lord like got in between, like the penis and the you know, everything else? Like, intercepted. I'm gonna go ahead and give her conception. And she bare a son. And the women said unto Naomi, blessed be the Lord, which hath not left thee this day. Freaking audio is messing up. Okay, I don't know if you can hear that or if it's just me. Anyway, like I was saying, blessed be the Lord, which hath not left thee this day without a kinsman, that his name may be famous in Israel. And he shall be unto thee a restorer of thy life and a nourisher of thine old age for thy daughter-in-law, which loveth thee, which is better to thee than seven sons hath borne him. And Naomi took the child and laid it in her bosom and became nurse unto it. And the woman, her neighbors, gave it a name, saying, There's a son born to Naomi, and they called his name Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. Now these are the generation. Oh, this should be good. These are the generations of Perez. Perez begat Hezron, and Hezron begat Ram. Ram. That's awesome. I want to name my kid Ram. Hey, Ram, get over. He would have to play, like, football or something, or I guess be really into computers. I don't know. Either one, I guess. Hey, Ram. Get. And Ram begat Aminadab. I don't know what he would be into. I'm not sure how that would. And Aminadab begat Nashon, and Nashon begat Salmon, and Salmon begat Boaz. Oh, this already happened. Okay, so now we're at Boaz. And Boaz, you know, family lines are really important back then, so like this the whole purpose of this weird short Ruth book was just to establish David as a descendant of somebody or something like that. I don't care. Does it matter? Why would that matter in the scheme of things? But apparently, you know, to this genius, to this, cutting-edge civilization we're reading about, it's important. And Boaz begat Obed, and Obed begat Jesse, and Jesse begat David. And that's the end of Ruth. She died. No, I don't know. Well, I assume she died eventually, but that's the end of that book. So we're on Samuel now. I don't know if a Samuel is as short. Let's see. Samuel is no. Samuel is 31 chapters. So we're back to normal sized books. We just had one or two small ones. Okay. Well, let's go right into it. First Samuel, that is. There was a certain man of Ramathaim-Zophim of Mount Ephraim, and his name was Elkanah, the son of Jeroham, the son of Elihu, the son of I don't care, the son of Zuph, an Ephrathite. Oh, that one. Okay, like what is son? One son of is already enough. I don't need two. Are there more than one Elkanah, the son of Jeroham? Like, there's a ton of that, so you have to go like. Three, no, not Elkanah, son of Jeroham, son of like Steve, Elkanah, son of Jeroham, son of Elihu. Oh, okay, that guy, yeah, no, bald, tall, yeah, okay, I know which Elkanah you're talking about. Much less like five generations. What are the odds that there's going to be more than one of that? Like, we got it. He had two wives. The name of one was Hannah, and the other was Peninnah. And Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. Yeah, pretty cool. So I think the point of this was just to say that he has two wives. That's it. Like, badass. Cool. And then that chapter's over. It's like, so there's this guy. He had two wives. Like, awesome. Good for him. End of story. Now. And this man went up out of his city yearly to worship and to sacrifice unto the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, the priests of the Lord, were there. And when the time was that Elkanah offered, he gave to Peninnah, I don't know, his wife, and to all her sons and daughters portions. But unto Hannah he gave a worthy portion, for he loved Hannah, but the Lord had shut up her womb. That's kind of a dick thing to do, right? I mean, I love how God can get away with doing things that nor if anyone else did. If anyone else had shut up this woman's womb, without her kind of wanting it, we'd have a serious sex offender on our hands. But since it's God, it's just like, I don't know, a test or something. Like, it's fine. He can do it. Someone's playing really bassy music nearby. That's very, very nice of people to just force their terrible bassy music upon you. That's a good that you know what? I want to meet that guy. He sounds like a great guy, whoever it is. Don't you hate that? Like, why? I don't want to listen to your effing shitty music. I don't. Why do you think that? Why do you inflict that on other people? I do my best to never have anyone hear anything I do. I don't want anyone to know I'm alive. Why do you have to? Like, oh my God, it makes me so mad. Anyway. And her adversary also provoked her sore, for to make her fret because the Lord had shut up her womb. What a bitch. So the other wife is like provoking her all the time, like, man, I don't know what to do with all these kids I'm having. Ah, too many kids. Don't you know what I mean when you just have so. Oh, whoops. I forgot. sorry about that. So she's kind of a jerk. And calls her her adversary. Like, is that how it works? Is it? It's like a baby making battle. They're adversaries. And as he did so year by year, when she went up to the house of the Lord, so she provoked her, and therefore she wept and did not eat. What an a-hole. Also, not eating is probably a great way to become fertile. That definitely will help. Then said Elkanah, her husband, to her, Hannah, why weepest thou, and why eatest thou not, and why is thou heart grieved? And the simple answer is, well, the other wife is a bitch, and she keeps making fun of me for not having kids. Go give her some beatings, as you would probably do in that age. Am I not better to thee than 10 sons? So Hannah rose up after they had eaten in Shiloh, and after they had drunk. Now Eli, the priest, sat upon a seat by a post of the temple of the Lord. And she was in bitterness of soul, and prayed unto the Lord, and wept sore. And she vowed a vow, and said, O Lord of hosts, if thou wilt indeed look on the affliction of thine handmaid, and remember me, and forget that not thine handmaid, but will give unto thine handmaid a man-child, then I will give him unto the Lord all the days of his life, and there shall no razor come upon his head. Wait a minute. Haven't we heard that before? Wasn't that how Samson was born? I think all you have to do to give birth to a superhero baby is just don't shave them. That's all. You know. That's a totally badass baby, by the way, that already has a beard, like, right when it's born. You know, no wonder Samson had superpowers. Even if he didn't, I'd still be, like, really impressed if he had a beard right when he was born. That's what that means, right? And it came to pass, as she continued praying before the Lord, that Eli marked her mouth. That just means he paid attention to, you know, he looked at her mouth. Now Hannah, she spake in her heart, only her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. Therefore Eli thought she had been drunken, because that's what you do when you're drunk. And Eli said unto her, how long wilt thou be drunken? Put away thy wine from thee. And Hannah answered and said, no, my lord, I am a woman of sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but have poured out my soul before the Lord. Count not thine handmaid for a daughter of Belial. We'll say Belial. For a daughter of Belial. For out of the abundance of complaint and grief have I spoken hitherto. Also, there's a great note here. Great Bible note. Drunkenness in man is an abominable crime, but much more in a woman. And I don't know of any religious people who don't drink. Seriously, I really don't. Every 100% of them drink. But maybe they just go, like, as long as they don't get technically drunken. Like, does God work on the 0.08 blood alcohol? You know, whatever. Maybe that's it. I'm pretty sure no one sticks to this rule, by the way. Also, I love the fact where it's worse for a woman to be drunk for some reason. I don't know why. Doesn't just, yeah, much worse. Yeah. I just agree with that statement. There's no logic provided. It's like, yeah, you're right. It's terrible. Where the F was I? Water time. Count not thine hand. Oh, I already read that. Then Eli answered and said, go in peace. And the God of Israel grant thee thy petition that thou why do I keep losing my space? That thou hast asked of him. And she said, let thine handmaid find grace in thy sight. So the woman went her way and did eat, and her countenance was no more sad. And they rose up in the morning early and worshipped before the Lord and returned and came to their house to Ramah. And Elkanah knew Hannah his wife, and the Lord remembered her. I always love that when the Lord remembers something. That's my favorite, especially when it follows from a guy having sex with his wife. The Lord's like, oh, I was just watching you guys have sex, and that totally reminded me. I remember you now. Wherefore it came to pass, when the time was come after Hannah had conceived, that she bare a son and called his name Samuel, saying, because I have asked him of the Lord. And the man Elkanah and all his house went up to offer unto the Lord the yearly sacrifice and his vow. But Hannah went not up, for she said unto her husband, I will not go up until the child be weaned, and then I will bring him, that he may appear before the Lord, and there abide forever. And Elkanah, her husband, said unto her, do what seemeth thee good. Tarry until thou have weaned him, only the Lord establish his word. So the woman abode, the dude abides, and gave her son suck until she weaned him when he was approximately 16 or 17. And I added that part, that. And when she weaned him, she took him up with her with the three bullocks, the one ephah of flour and a bottle of wine, and brought him unto the house of the Lord in Shiloh. And the child was young. But by this time, of course, the child had a full beard on his face because she had not used a razor on him. And they slew a bullock and brought the child to Eli. And she said, O my lord, as thy soul liveth, my lord, I am the woman that stood by thee here praying unto the Lord. And the Lord's like, oh, that was you. Okay, no, I didn't recognize you at first. But now that you say that, yeah, totally, I remember that. I just love, like, having to remind the Lord, hey, Lord, it was I. Like, yeah, I know. For this child I prayed, and the Lord hath given me my petition, which I asked of him. Therefore also I have lent him to the Lord. As long as he liveth, he shall be lent to the Lord. And he worshipped there. Yeah, like I was saying, I can't believe I haven't thought of this before, but for any you Wayne's World fans out there, the Lord must be like Wayne when, you know that part when they went, sorry, I'm so congested, when they went to the gasworks or whatever it's called the night before and Phil was really drunk and then the next morning Phil keeps telling Wayne about it even though, you know, they were with him. And so, like, the whole time he's like, Phil, we were there. Yeah, we were there. It's sort of, the Lord must feel like that all the time. Why do you need to remind the Lord of things? There should never be a sentence that starts, hey, all-powerful, all-knowing God, remember that time? Like, yes, I remember everything perfectly like it is now because I'm timeless. There's no, it's, I love that. Like, I was the woman who's, okay, you know, I see it now. You look a little different, but, you know, it took my mind a second. But, yeah, no, I got it. Therefore, I have lent him to the Lord. As long as he liveth, shall he be lent to the Lord. And as soon as he dies, then the Lord had better return him with interest. And he worshipped the Lord there. So that's the end of that chapter. I'm going to pause it a second, decongest. Okay. 1 Samuel 2. And Hannah prayed and said, my heart rejoiceth in the Lord. Mine horn is exalted in the Lord. My mouth is enlarged over mine enemies. All right, look, I'm sorry. I'm just not a good enough person. I cannot not laugh at that phrase. My mouth is enlarged over mine enemies. Yes, things are going great for me. I'm blowing all of my enemies. Like, it's awesome. Because that's what Jesus taught, right? Like, don't turn the other cheek and then enlarge your mouth over them. Like, that's the best way to deal with your enemies. Because I rejoice in my salvation. There is none there's none holy as the Lord, for there is none beside thee, neither is there any rock like our God. Weird, that's my version left out a word, I think, because it should be, neither is there any can rock like our God. It's totally. Guy can rock. He's awesome. God can wail on a guitar. Another Wayne's World reference. We should overdub God on this track. He can really wail. Talk no more so exceedingly proudly. Let not arrogancy come out of your mouth, for the Lord is a God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed. The bows of mighty men are broken, and they that stumbled are girdled with strength. Is this another one of those shitty songs? Because it sort of seems like it. I don't really know what's happening. They that were full have hired out themselves for bread, and they that were hungry ceased, so that the barren hath borne 7, and she that hath many children is waxed feeble. And the Lord killeth, and the Lord maketh alive. He bringeth down to the grave, and bringeth up. The Lord maketh poor, and maketh rich. He bringeth low, and lifteth up. He raiseth up the poor out of the dust, and lifteth up the beggar from the dunghill, to set them among princes, and make them inherit the throne of glory. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he hath set the world upon. So what is the point of this? Is this... I get, apparently this is like Hannah praying or something. People always try to say, and I tend to agree, that religious people aren't necessarily stupid. But how can any smart person ever say a prayer like this? Well, it's so pointless. I don't understand what its purpose is. Like, once, if you actually believe that there's an all-powerful God, then that's the end of the story. You don't even need, nobody needs to say or do anything. It's all, he's all-powerful. He knows everything. He knows everything. Everything that's going on in your mind. You don't need to do anything. There's no, why would you need to keep reminding yourself that God is responsible for all these things? Like, yeah, duh. He's God. He would be responsible for everything. Like, he, and I love the part where it's like, he raises poor people and sets them among princes and you know, takes princes and makes them poor. Like, what? Why not just have everybody have food and stuff? Like, why does God do that? I don't understand. It's almost like a chant for like poor or oppressed people to just try to keep reminding themselves of something, If there's no way this isn't insightful or anything. It doesn't, it's just weird. Why do you need to keep reminding yourself that God does all these things? Like, yeah, if he exists, he does everything. There's no, like, what do you think someone else is responsible for stuff? Anyway. He will keep the feet of his saints, and the wicked shall be silent in darkness, for by strength shall no man prevail. I'd argue that several times in history, by strength, have people prevailed. Lots of times, I would say. The adversaries of the Lord shall be broken to pieces. Out of heaven shall he thunder upon them. The Lord shall judge the ends of the earth, and shall give strength unto his king, and exalt the horn of his anointed. That just means make. Whoever is his anointed just has a very large penis. That's what that means. Exalt the horn of his. And Elkanah went to Ramah to his house, and the child did minister unto the Lord before Eli the priest. Now the sons of Eli were sons of Belial, we decided. They knew not the Lord. I don't know who this Belial guy is, but he has a shitload of sons, and none of them seems to know anything about the Lord. He really should get on that, I think. And yes, listeners, before you start sending me messages, I know that being a son of Belial just means that they were perverse and wicked or whatever and worshipped idols. I know there isn't actually a guy named Belial or Belial or however you would pronounce it that is having a bunch of sons. I get a fair number of messages correct me on things I'm making jokes about. And I actually appreciate it. I totally do. I appreciate people participating and stuff. And of course, I'm sure I get stuff wrong now and then. But just so you know, I usually am trying to make a joke. Like, I read a ton of these notes to make sure I'm informed, about these things. And that's why it takes so much prep to do these. Although, probably not as much as it should. I probably should take more prep. But most of any of the comedy type stuff, I don't prepare that. I just prepare making sure I know what's happening, and I know it doesn't seem like it, but anyway, it's just a little side note. And the priest's custom with the people was that when any man offered sacrifice, the priest's servant came while the flesh was in seething with a flesh hook of three teeth in his hand, and he struck it onto the pan or kettle or cauldron or pot. All that the flesh hook brought up, the priest took for himself. So they did in Shiloh unto all the Israelites that came hither. I don't want to spend too much time on this because it's been covered 100 times, but is it not completely obvious that religion, and this religion specifically, was just a way for certain people to sort of freeload off the rest of the people and to like have control over them, because the priests who, coincidentally, were appointed by other priests and by other priests and then by God, of course, or at least, they said God chose them. They just get a portion of whatever offerings you offer, and that's how they eat. So it seems pretty obvious that this is just sort of a, it might not be a like a premeditated plot. Well, it might have been, but it also, I mean, it might just be sort of a way, like maybe they kind of believe it, but it's also a way for them to maintain power when they probably are not, maybe they're not like physically powerful or happen to have like wealth or whatever, but that was another way for them. It just seems very, seems a little bit more, just a little bit more plausible than that there's actually a God and he decided to talk to these freaking losers in this loser time, loser place. And didn't tell him anything that they couldn't have already known from that time. Like, that's a little more plausible to me. And if any man said unto him, let them not fail to burn the fat presently, and then take as much as thy soul desireth, then he would answer him, nay, but thou shalt give it me now, and if not, I will take it by force. I don't really understand this psychotic nonsense, but pretty much I think they are trying to make sure the Lord gets his fair share of the meal. Like, there's some argument here, like these priests aren't following the proper priest law or something, as you'll find out later. But it's funny that they're like, no, you have to make sure the Lord eats first, and then we take our share. Like the Lord needs it. Just, I cannot believe that anyone believes these people were talking to God. There's no way. Hey, guess what? All Christians, if this part of the Bible is not true, like if it's not accurate, if they weren't actually talking to God, then none of the religion works. There's no, right? I mean, if they weren't talking to God, then this wouldn't be in the Bible. You know, that's in the Bible because this is supposedly God. And this does not sound like any God that they would be talking to. It definitely is not. Wherefore, the sin of the young men was very great before the Lord, for the men abhorred the offering of the Lord. So they messed up and did something wrong. Moreover, his mother made him a little coat and brought it to him year to year when she came up with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifice. And Eli blessed Elkanah, his wife, and said, "The Lord give thee seed of this woman for the loan which is lent to the Lord." And they went unto their own home. And the Lord visited Hannah, so that she conceived and bare three sons and two daughters. And geez, he visited her quite frequently, conjugally, I guess you could say. And the child Samuel grew before the Lord. And now Eli was very old, and heard all that his sons did unto Israel, and how they lay with the women that assembled at the door of the. Oh, geez, I passed over this part. They laid with the women that assembled at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. So priests abusing their power is apparently not a new thing, not even in the last thousands, couple thousand, 3, 4,000 years. That's hilarious, and I can't believe I skipped over that the first time I read this. And he said unto them, "See, I do hours of prep. Why do ye such things? For I hear of your evil dealings by all this people. Nay, my sons, for it is no good report that I hear. Ye make the Lord's people to transgress. If one man sin against another, the judge shall judge him. But if a man sin against the Lord, who shall entreat for him?" Yeah, if a man sin against the Lord, who shall entreat for him? Good point. You know, when you sin against a pretend thing, who's going to like defend that pretend thing? Who's going to punish you? Someone has to. Like the great bumper sticker says, blasphemy is a victimless crime. If one man sin against another, I already read that. Notwithstanding, they hearken not unto the voice of their father, because the Lord would slay them. Because the what? Notwithstanding, they hearken not unto the voice of their father, because the Lord would slay them? What the? That sounds like the opposite of what it should be. Anyway, whatever, who cares? And the child Samuel grew on and was in favor both with the Lord and also with men. Ooh, he was a man's man, huh? He was popular with the men. And there came a man of God unto Eli and said unto him, "Thus saith the Lord." So this mystery person just appears. "Did I plainly appear unto the house of thy father when they were in Egypt in Pharaoh's house? And did I," and he's all mad, he's got attitude, he's got tude, he's giving him tude. "And did I choose him out of all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to offer upon my altar, to burn incense? Did you rub my lamp? To wear an ephod before me? And did I give unto the house of thy father all the offerings made by fire of the children of Israel?" And Eli must be saying, "Yes, yes, yes. The answer is yes. Why are you asking me? We both know this. Wherefore, kick ye at my sacrifice and at mine offering, which I have commanded in my habitation, and honorest thy sons above me, to make yourselves fat with the chiefest of all the offerings of Israel, my people. Wherefore, the Lord God of Israel saith, I said indeed that thy house and the house of thy father should walk before me forever. But now the Lord saith, Be it far from me, for them that honor me I will honor, and they that despise me shall be lightly esteemed." That's a nice, gentle way of putting it. Lightly esteemed. They will not be, you know, that's such a subtle way of putting it. I'm sure he actually means like they're going to be killed and trampled on, and like it's usually because God, that's how God deals with things. "Behold, the days come that I will cut off thine arm and the arm of thy father's house, that there shall not be an old man in thine house." That sounds nice, actually. It's a pain to have an old man in the house. "And thou shalt see an enemy in my habitation in all the wealth which God shall give Israel, and there shall not be an old man in thine house forever." So what's happening, in case you didn't know, is God apparently sent like a prophet or something to punish Eli for not being a good father because his priest kids are totally messing up. So yeah, that's what happens. I don't know why this prophet that God sent can't just lead the people, you know? And the man of thine, whom I shall not cut off from mine altar, shall be to consume thine eyes and to grieve thine heart, and all the increase of thine house shall die in the flower of their age. Wow. And this shall be a sign unto thee that shall come upon thy two sons, on Hophni and Phinehas. In one day they shall die, both of them. And I will raise me up a faithful priest that shall do according to that which is in mine heart and in mine mind. And I will build him a sure house, and he shall walk before mine anointed forever. And it shall come to pass that every one that is left in thine house shall come and crouch to him for a piece of silver and a morsel of bread, and shall say, put me, I pray thee, into one of the priest's office, that I may eat a piece of bread. So that's the end of the reading. Wow, so that sounds a bit harsh to me. Once again, the Lord is punishing people who weren't even born yet for something that someone now did. That's a great, great message, you know. That's a great way of dealing with things. I don't even know how people could take this seriously ever, as I say every time. Not even worth repeating. All right, so that was that episode, and I'm going to be better. I set a reminder. Yeah, I'm really busy, and sorry, I'm not trying to sound important, but it's just hard. Yeah, keep checking out F This Podcast, if you would. I think it's just getting funnier and funnier. Maybe if you tried early episodes and didn't like it or something, try to come back. I think it's good. But that's just me. We do have a very interesting, specific sense of humor that maybe people wouldn't like. So if you haven't given it a try, please give it a try. And, that one is so easy. We just, you know, I keep that one. We keep up with because, well, actually we didn't record one of those for like 3 weeks, I think. So it goes to show. But that one takes much less prep. We just sort of keep track of things that are funny or that bother us all week or whatever. And usually, complain about them. It's very funny. It's a very convincing ad. I know I'm doing right now. But also check out my Facebook. It's got a lot of likes and I like that, but not nearly as many likes as we have listeners. So if you can, please do that. It's very helpful. Also, thank you for people who gave me iTunes reviews. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. But that is a tiny fraction of the number of listeners I have. So if you could please do that, I really, really greatly appreciate it. And thanks as always for listening, and I'll see you again soon.